All right, thank you for that introduction. As I said, my name is Ben Von Kennel. I'm a third-year PhD student under Dr. Ames Cacciotti at Mississippi State, and I know we're at a cotton conference, and as my title suggests, I do have a little bit of corn data to represent here, but I promise to explain the relevancy of it. So that will get started. Bollworm has extensive host strains being collected from a total of 238 plant species within 36 plant families. And with all of those host plants in mind, corn is not only the preferred host, it's the most suitable. Females are have a higher fecundity when reared on sweet corn, and larvae develop faster on corn in general, compared to any other host or artificial diet. We've long noted that our most damaging outbreaks of bollworm occur in areas where our corn and cotton acreage is in comparable acreage. And that being said, In the past 10 years or so, we've seen corn acreage in Mississippi skyrocket, and as a result of that, we've also seen a greater number of outbreaks in our BT cotton. As the year progresses, or the growing season progresses, and we see our corn mature out of the field, cotton becomes a sink for many insects, and that definitely holds true for the cotton bollworm. This is just a list of the current BT corn and cotton traits that are currently on the market. TwinLink is should be seeing some acreage in this coming growing season. But I wanted to point out the main thing here is that we have similar expression of seemingly every cry protein in both corn and cotton. Cry1AC, although it is not directly expressed in our corn varieties, and it is somewhat, in my understanding, Cry1A05 is structurally similar to Cry1AC plus Cry1F. But other than that, we have exact cry proteins in both commodities. I didn't put on here any single gene corn varieties. That being said, because they were never designed to target bollworm or corn earworm, they're designed primarily for our corn borer complex. So that being said, my objectives were to evaluate the overall pressure of corn earworm in Mississippi infesting our Genuity VT Triple Pro field corn. And to take that a step further, we wanted to develop LC50s for progeny from larvae that were reared on VT Triple Pro field corn and non-VT field corn. For the first part of my survey, I identified 20 fields across Mississippi that were planted to VT Triple Pro. With that, I also found at least 10 fields that were non-VT, just to see the comparison of an infestation level. There were 100 ears scouted each week, starting at R1 or silking, and the ears were examined on the surface for eggs and or larvae, and then once that was done, the ears were peeled back and examined on the kernels for larvae. And then the scouting was terminated at R4. On the y-axis here, we have the percentage of ears that were infested across all sample dates, or all ears for each sample date, and on the x-axis, we have the sample date. As you can see, we have very low pressure, relatively low pressure, even in our non-BT throughout much of the growing season, with a huge spike on the 24th of July here. I will say that in the past 3 or 4 years, you could pretty much turn this graph on its head, and this is not what we've been seeing even in our BT corn acres. We've seen a huge influx of larvae infesting our BT corn. For my methodology for my assay to develop LC50s, in fields where I did find a good enough infestation of larvae in a VT Triple Pro, I collected larvae that were at least a third or a quarter of an inch long. That being said, they were about a third instar larvae, and that I wanted to do that just so to make sure I had good selection pressure already placed on these larvae. Larvae were collected, put on artificial diet, and brought back to our rearing facility at Mississippi State. Once they pupated, we segregated larvae based on the ventral V-shaped suture of the females and the two rectal pads near the ventral end of the, or on the ventral side of the males. And from here, I'm just going to clarify this because there could be some confusion in upcoming slides. These crosses represent, will represent progeny, but the first abbreviation here is the respective crop that the specimen was collected from, and in parentheses is the gender of that specimen. And so we have, what the result is, we have two reciprocal and two back crosses, with a total of four crosses to evaluate. I collected Bolgar-2 and 9BT tissue. These leaves were collected, they were the third node down from the top. They were immediately taken and put in a negative 80 degree freezer for 72 hours. Upon that time, they were lyophilized and put back in the negative 80 for an additional 48 hours. Upon that time, they were ground until they passed through a 40 mesh sieve. And then through just a process of basic cereal dilutions, I mixed it with a 0.02% agar solution to create a slurry to overlay over the dye. And to prepare the bioassay trays, a half a milliliter of dye was added to each well in a 128 well bioassay tray. Then 50 microliters of one solution, of the eight solutions, was placed in each well, and these were allowed to dry. After the wells had dried, each well received one neonate larvae, and mortality ratings were rated 7 days after the initiation of the study, with mortality being apparent death or any larvae that had not molted into the second instar, which is basically a larvae that weighed less than 10 milligrams. The data was analyzed using PROC, Probit, and SAS, and fiducial limits for the respective crosses that did not overlap were considered significantly different. On the y-axis here, we have the overlay concentration in milligrams of powder per milliliter of agar. And as you can see here, where we have separation in the data on the graph, in each instance where the female was reared on VT triple pro field corn, the progeny had a higher LC50 on Bolgar-2 cotton. Now, what makes good data great is being able to reproduce it. And in 2012, we were not exactly able to do that. This is a similar graph arranged in the same manner. On the y-axis, we have overlay concentration in milligrams of slurry per milliliter of agar. And here, the only cross that did separate was where both the male and female were reared on BT triple pro field corn. So in summary, our bollworm pressure was overall very low across the state of Mississippi. That being said, we had very low pressure in our cotton for the most part. We had a late flight at the end of the year, but for the most part, we had a very light year as far as bollworms go. Dual gene corn varieties are not 100% bulletproof when it comes to controlling corn earworm in the ear stage. And what I believe we're doing here is we're basically selecting for individuals that are more fit to feed on BT cotton. The previous two data slides are indicative of what we're measuring in one generation. Normally, we typically have 3 to 4 generations that develop on dual gene corn varieties in Mississippi before going on to infest our cotton acreage. So it remains to be said what 3 or 4 generations that develop through dual gene corn can do, but I definitely think we are dealing with something here that we can quantify. It's just going to take some time. Bollworm larvae were resulting from moles reared on BT triple pro did have a higher LC50 on Bolgar-2 cotton. The next step to this is to take these crosses and go to the field and manually inoculate plants with it and see if we can reproduce the same results. It's a very time-consuming, tedious work to do just the assays part of this. It takes so many larvae, so that's where we're going. We tried to get some of that work done this year, and it didn't quite plan out. But anyway, with that, I'd like to thank Teresa Ziegelman and Kathy Knighton for colony management and upkeep, my advisors, fellow graduate students, and our summer employees, and last but not least, Cotton Incorporated for making this research possible. And I'll take any questions. Yes, sir.
Do you have a plan to try to reverse past the week
The question is, do I plan to basically do the same project but in reverse, going from cotton back to corn? And no, sir, that has never really been discussed due to the fact that we normally don't see the transition in the same growing season. You don't see a lot of, because corn just, it's so attractive to them. I mean, and by the time the corn's drying down, the cotton is in either beginning bloom or peak bloom, and so there's no chance for them to go back to corn once developing in cotton. So, but that would be a different angle. That's definitely outside the box. But anyway, Dominic. Okay, the question is, did I see differences in the number of larval density per year in between the two growing seasons? And yes, 2011, we had multiple larvae developing on a single ear, and it's just higher pressure. I'm sure there was a higher degree of cannibalism going on in those ears. But I think that when you play the numbers game, just more numbers, you know, are there. And this year we didn't see quite as many. It wasn't something that we took into account, was how many larvae per year were there. But in the back of my mind, remembering it, there was naturally or generally only one larvae present per year when we collected it from Triple Pro. Yes. Yes, ma'am. The question is, have I read anything on the expression of the proteins in corn? It's very, very high in the vegetative stages, very, very high. When you get into the expression in the kernel, the genes split, and from there it gets pretty much going down a rabbit hole, is my understanding. I know you can know it, but I'm not that familiar with it, but to say the least, you can. All right, thank you.